Welcome to the Soft Verbal Podcast, presented by Dead Soxy, hosted by RebelGrove.com publisher Neil McCready, and featuring RebelGrove.com and Rivals.com recruiting analyst Russell Johnson.
Awesome!
The Soft Verbal Podcast is your number one podcast dedicated to Ole Miss football and basketball recruiting.
Caution, you are about to enter the no-spin zone.
Featuring guests from throughout the Rivals.com network, the Soft Verbal Podcast tells you what is happening and what's going to happen on the recruiting trail, and it does it in style. Just like Dead Soxy.
I'm better looking than you.
Visit DeadSoxy.com and enter Rebel Grove at checkout for 25% off your order of the best dress socks you'll ever wear. Now here's your host, Neil McCready.
Welcome to another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxy. I'm your host, Neil McCready. Today on the show, Rob Cassidy of Rivals.com, the regional analyst, joins us. We talk a lot of recruiting. A lot of Ole Miss recruiting, a lot of other recruiting as well. I think you'll enjoy it. First, let me tell you about Dead Soxy. Warm weather is on the horizon. With it comes the inevitable debate of sock or no sock with your loafers. So save your feet and your shoes from making their own impression. Step into spring with some no-shows from Dead Soxy. You really need to experience the difference a quality sock makes. It's the first step in dressing for the job you want and not the job you have. Go to DeadSoxy.com. Enter the code REBELGROVE at checkout to receive 30% off all orders, including sale items. These no-shows are the same quality you already love and enjoy with the Dead Soxy traditional dress socks, and they come with the no-slip guarantee. So go to DeadSoxy.com, check out their no-show collection, and remember to enter the promo code REBELGROVE at checkout for 30% off all orders. And look, give these a shot. Do us a favor. If you've ordered a pair, get another pair. Try the no shows. They're great. The no slips, they won't slip. They don't show. They feel good. They look good. And if you haven't tried Dead Soxy yet, take advantage of the 30% offer. Help the podcast. Help the site. You're doing us a favor. Let them know that you appreciate what they've done in keeping the Soft Verbal Podcast alive. That's how podcasts work. You support our sponsors. They support us. We keep the things rolling as we start to get focused on the 2020 recruiting class. I'm coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. The number is 662-257-1900. Call that number. Ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. There's no hassle. There's no haggle. Straight to the bottom line. It's an easy, efficient way to make your car buying experience. So if you think you're in the market for a vehicle, think you might be in the market, call Corey, get a quote. Won't take you but a minute. It's going to get you right to the bottom line. It's going to give you, at the very worst, it's going to give you a baseline going into your car shopping. And I think it might just spur you to go do what I did, and that's let Corey be your truck guy. Let Corey be your car guy. He'll take care of you. Great service after the sale, delivery options, everything you could want in a car dealer. Corey Clark and the people there at Clark Ford, they'll do it for you. And I'll make it even better. Tell Corey you heard about Clark Ford on the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxy, and you'll save an additional $500 on your bottom line at Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900. Now here's Rob Cassidy of Rivals.com. Rob, welcome back into the Soft Verbal Podcast. Appreciate you, you spending some time with us. Opening day, I guess by the time people hear this, is today. I know your Mets are, they just extended DeGrom and Syndergaard is waving flags at Syracuse, and everyone's generally happy. Are you optimistic or pessimistic about the Mets?
I mean, I don't know. I guess cautiously optimistic. I'm just waiting for the injuries to start. I don't know, man. You learn a long time ago. You know, I've been a Mets fan my entire life. You know, I was born 3 miles away from Shea Stadium. I've learned a long time ago that even when you're optimistic, you're not really optimistic. You're just kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. So I'm sure Robbie Cano will be hurt, and Jacob DeGrom will have Tommy John surgery again. Then we'll be unable to trade him because he'll never be the same, and it'll start us on a downward spiral that'll last 10 years. So I guess I'm optimistic in that way.
All right, let's talk some recruiting before people get mad at me. Haven't gotten your thoughts since the signing period ended. Matt Luke's first real whole class. He finishes number 22 in the in the national rankings, which on the surface isn't that bad. In fact, it's fairly good. It wasn't the top 15 class that a lot of people said that he needed. And then you look at just the national rankings, just SEC West alone. Alabama's number 2, LSU is number 3, Texas A&M is number 6, Auburn's number 13. And there's Arkansas at 20, Ole Miss at 22, Mississippi State at 24. It's not exactly the most forgiving division in college football. Just kind of your general overall thoughts about the Ole Miss class, about the job that Matt Luke did.
No, you know, he doesn't do a ton of recruiting, or he didn't in this class. I don't think he had a single kid from Florida. So he kind of stays, as far as specific recruits go, he kind of stays off my radar. But I know that people do like him, especially dealing in the JUCOs like I used to. I don't do that anymore, but I did cover them last year. He seems like, you know, he was the guy that they needed. I think they raised some eyebrows when they hired him. But I think he was definitely the guy that they needed to kind of weather the storm with the NCAA stuff and all of that, because he is, truly or falsely, he does have a reputation as a player's coach. Players do love this guy. They seem to, you know, kind of enjoy his demeanor. And I think that's important when you're trying to bridge a gap through some turbulent times, is what he's done. And that's why I don't think you can be too hard on that class. It is a good class on the surface. You know how many other schools would kill for a class ranked in the top 25 like that? I mean, there's endless ones. Yeah. Endless good schools. My alma mater, definitely. Kansas State, I don't know that they've ever had a top 25 class. They'd kill for that. But especially coming off turbulent times like that, I think it's pretty good. Now, I think they've got to parlay it into something bigger this year, because you did mention the division and the teams that they have to play against and recruit against. I think they should be able to. I think, you know, now that things are kind of on solid footing there in Oxford, you know, they didn't have the season they wanted to have last year, but if they do this coming year, I think that, you know, with a guy like Luke at the helm, they can really recruit at a high level.
All right, let's go there, because obviously they go into this 2019 season. They're bowl eligible. The NCAA stuff finally over. I mean, look, there's wreckage that's left behind that still has to be cleaned up, but the storm is gone. There are, you know, clear skies and all of the weather analogies and stuff that we could use. They're all sort of true. You can sort of feel the storm's gone. The NCAA thing's gone. They're not going to answer to questions about postseason bans and all of that stuff. They're bowl eligible. If they can get to 6 wins, they'll play in somebody's bowl game. He went out, he being Matt Luke, went out in the offseason. He made changes at both coordinator positions, changes that needed to be made, and at least on the surface, made pretty splashy hires. Rich Rodriguez is the new offensive coordinator. Mike McIntyre, the former Colorado coach, now the defensive coordinator. Just in terms of the buzz that maybe you hear or don't hear, and then your just kind of your personal opinions, how much will having names like that on his staff help him in a vacuum?
Well, it's going to be a combination of things. You know, I think the biggest thing right now is, you know, everybody talks about those NCAA sanctions and how recruits really don't pay attention to them, and I think that's true to an extent. But they do when other coaches tell them to. And it'll be nice to not have other coaches being like, oh, you don't want to go there. The NCAA is all over their campus. Look, they can't even go to a bowl ban. Those talking points are gone. And that happens a lot. It's not, I think, in a vacuum, as you mentioned, players don't think about that or don't really care about that when they're being recruited by Ole Miss. Where it comes into play is when other schools are recruiting them and have a tendency to kind of bring that up. Now, and I can speak from a Florida perspective here. McIntyre's name carries some weight down here in Florida. If you go back and you look at Colorado's class, they've put classes under him, especially the last two before he got removed. They've done a wonderful job recruiting the state of Florida. Now, I don't know if that's something Ole Miss is going to want to do, but having McIntyre and Rodriguez to a similar extent there could help them do that. Those are two guys that have history in the state, that have name recognition in the state, that know all the right handlers and all the right people to deal with in the state. So if they do decide to kind of move heavier into Florida, where there is a lot of talent, I think those are two guys that they've hired that, even beyond the name recognition, have the connections, kind of the experience recruiting Florida that could help them. You know, I think that they're equipped to do it. Do they want to do it? I don't know. You would know that better than I do. I have not asked Matt Luke that. But they do definitely have the equipment to do it now, should they so choose.
Well, they've already dipped into Florida in this 2020 class. They got a commitment from he's not highly ranked, at least not in our system. I'm curious whether
the running back from Jacksonville, right?
Yeah, Kywan Herndon, the running back from Jacksonville, is 5'9", yep. 180. There were some people – look, because we're living in this, you know, everybody wants to immediately compare somebody And because Rich Rodriguez is here and he had the success that he had at West Virginia, you know, 15 years or so ago with Pat White and Noel Devine and Steve Slayton and that team that was explosive as hell, everyone immediately kind of compares him to Noel Devine, and I don't know that that's fair. It's just because of stature. What do you know about Herndon? You know, just kind of your thoughts on him.
I have not seen him in about a year. I will be seeing him this weekend, actually. Crazy as that is, I am going. I will be at an event where his team is 7-on-7 is. The last time I saw him, his stature. Yes, he's short, but my biggest issue with him is how slight he was. If he put on some weight, like I said, I haven't seen him in a year. I mean, he could show up looking like a Hulk, for all I know. But I was concerned with that. I mean, if you're going to be short, you can be short. But you can't be short and slight and expect to thrive at the Division I level. And I don't think, obviously, that's not a problem that can't be corrected. Like I said, I could show up in Tampa on Saturday and, you know, this guy could remade his entire body, because I do think he does some pretty good things well. You know, he's got the speed. He's an explosive kid. He just needed to kind of dedicate himself in the weight room to eating. And, you know, that may have happened. So I'll report back there afterwards, I suppose.
Do kids even – I'm curious just kind of your thoughts on this. Rodriguez obviously had
– Hold on. Before we get into this, let me complain about something real quick.
Go ahead.
This is not about Herndon necessarily.
Okay.
The Kansas State fans are the same way too. Anytime there's a short running back – no matter who he is, if he's 5'5", guess what? That is Darren Sproles. And you're like, well, you know, the problem is he's short. And they're like, well, Darren Sproles was short. You can't get caught up in that trap, because, you know, for every 5'5 running back, it turns out to be Noel Devine or Darren Sproles. You know, a bunch of them end up joining fraternities.
Yeah, it's a good point. All right, you mentioned this kind of thing. Let's go here, because I know some people playfully talk about conspiracies as it pertains to rankings, and some people are legitimately think that their school's picked on. So let's use Herndon as an example. Right now, in the rival system, he is a 2-star, 5.4 rated player. What does that rating mean?
A high 2-star.
Yeah, what does that rating mean, and what has to happen for this particular kid? And we'll talk about him. Kaiwan, if you're listening, we apologize. For this particular kid, what does he have to do to change his rating? What goes into the process of re-ranking Herndon?
So there are three levels of 2-stars, right? It's 5-2, 5-3, 5-4. 5-4 is the highest. It's on the border of a 5-5, which is the lowest 3-star. And I think there's a thing on the website that says, you know, 5-4 2-stars are major FBS players – you know, or contribute by their senior year. And so it's not like, I think people see these 2-star rankings as slaps in the face, where it's like we're saying that they should play intramural. But any kid that has a ranking, you know, we obviously think he's a very good football player. With him, and like I said, kind of what was holding him back is his size. He didn't, you know, the film from his sophomore year, like I said, I have not seen this kid in a year, wasn't necessarily super impressive. We haven't gone back and reevaluated him since. But I will see him this weekend. We'll see how he's grown. We'll see, you know, if the explosion is still there. Because that's something that I do remember from sophomore film. It wasn't – I don't know if he was playing behind somebody or what was going on there. But it seemed as though, you know, the film just wasn't conclusive, I guess. And we haven't seen him in a ton of events outside of that film. And it has been a year. This weekend will be interesting because they'll be in Tampa at this Adidas event. I know he's with the team. I ran into him after an event earlier this year. I didn't get a chance to see him play. I mean, like I said, I don't think he's a bad player. I think he does some things well. He's got some tools. He's going to have to get bigger to kind of succeed in the SEC, though.
So it's one of those things where you see him in Tampa this weekend, and if he turns your eye a little bit, you start to put more scrutiny on him and start to discuss with other people in the network where he should be? Is that how that works?
100%. These things are always fluid. Neil, you know that as much as anything. These rankings change. Players go up, players go down, and they're fluid until the end. It's, you know, we've had guys go from 5 stars to, I don't know if we've ever had anybody go from 5 to 2, but we've had guys go from 5 to 3. We've had guys go from 2 to 4. It's, you know, you see a guy once and you could see him on the worst day of his life. You know, I mean, he could have just had a family member pass away. You know, the first time you saw him, you weren't real impressed. That's why I always get so upset when we do these cross region evaluations, where, you know, we'll bring a guy to the 5-star challenge and I've seen 30 times be awesome. But he'll get up there and have the worst day of his life in front of, you know, the other guys that rank players. And, you know, that's it. They made up their mind. This kid sucks. Meanwhile, I've seen the kid 20 times. They've seen him once. And I think the more times you see a guy in person, you get a better feel for his actual skill set.
Ole Miss is probably going to have a really good day, really good series of days at the NFL draft. Looks like DK Metcalf's going early in the first round. A.J. Brown could go in the first round. I saw Greg Little yesterday. I think there's some optimism that he could go in the first round.
But look, big shout to myself for trying to rank DK Metcalf even higher than we did. I think we had him higher than anybody. And I tried to rank him even higher, and I was told by my boss that he did not possess the speed to
I do remember. It's funny you say that because this isn't to pick on, because I could not. I mean, listen, here's the bad part about – I'm not defending anybody in particular at Rivals, and I'm not attacking anybody in particular at Rivals, because
we have fun with it.
If you rank that many kids, you're going to get some wrong. And Metcalf and A.J. Brown were both rated pretty highly, but I can remember it was one of the few times – I've been in this job now for 11 years. It was one of the few times that I kind of argued for a kid, and it was just because I'd seen them play. I saw them both play in the state championship games, A.J. for Starkville and D.K. for Oxford on maybe it was the same night. It might have been different nights. I don't remember, but I saw them both play in their championship games, and then I saw both of them in Mobile at or wherever the hell the thing was that year. I think it was Mobile.
Montgomery.
It was in Montgomery. I saw them in Montgomery at the Mississippi-Alabama All-Star Classic practices, and I can remember telling...
Yeah, we were together.
Yeah, I was with you, and I remember telling people, wait a minute, that guy's not a five-star, and that guy's not a five-star, and it was... You were like, yeah, they're both five stars. But my thing was, so if they're not five stars, and I wasn't really arguing that they weren't five stars, my thing was, can you show me the people who are, because I just want to watch them play. I mean, you know, it was one of those deals where, and I can see, and I mean, I can look back on it now and say, I understand why someone would watch Metcalf and go, I don't know that he has maybe some of the route skills or whatnot, but then you watch him at the combine and he pops a 4.3 whatever, and you go, well, the whole speed argument's out the window. I mean, he's the total package. He absolutely should have been a five-star player. Yet you could pick that apart year after year, and I get, look, it's easy fodder for fans. It's a really hard process to evaluate.
And it's not like we had him. I mean, DK was the number 70 player in the country at every position, and A.J. Brown was, I think, 53 at any position. The number one wide receiver in the country that year, five-star, was N'Keal Harry, who will also be a first-round pick at Arizona State. I don't know. I think they may have him going. I don't know. I'm not a big-time draft nerd. I don't know who they have as the first wide receiver pick, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was Harry. So it's not like we completely missed at the top. Both of those guys should have been higher. And as you said, I was in love with DK at that thing. I think we should have made him a five-star immediately. But it is a council. And have I been wrong before? Yeah, of course. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, everything I say is right, everything everybody else at Rival says is wrong. But in this instance, it turns out I was right.
How much, back to my original question, how much does having a draft presence, especially a top-of-the-draft presence, even if it's just sort of in a – residual sort of way, how much does that help a program like Ole Miss when they're out in the recruiting trail and they can look a kid in the eye and say, hey, we put kids in the draft. We put kids in the NFL. Look, we had 2/3 first rounders this year.
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, but you have to know how to sell it too. So it has to be, you have to put emphasis on it, because these kids, one of the big misconceptions, I think, is that these kids pay attention to anything except for, you know, what's going on at their school and their social life. I got a big argument with Tennessee fans once where they're like, why wouldn't a quarterback want to come to Tennessee? We had Peyton Manning. And I'm like, look, I don't want to tell you this, but none of these kids know that Peyton Manning played at Tennessee. And I know that sounds insane to people like us, but they have no idea. Unless you tell them, they do not know. I got into a conversation with a recruit last year about Lane Kiffin, where he would not believe me that Lane Kiffin was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders. I was like, I don't know. Do I have to pull up my phone and show you? It's the thing that happens. They just don't pay attention to the landscape like that. They're not football historians. So it's not like they're watching the draft and paying attention to where everybody's coming from, unless they're already considering your school. But if you have the tools and the presentation to kind of show them this and make them know about this and make them care about this, then yeah, I think it can be a huge help. But not only does it A, have to happen, B, you have to kind of know how to sell it.
Winning. Ole Miss hasn't won in a couple of years. They haven't been to a bowl game since the Sugar Bowl in 2016. They've had this postseason ban and all that stuff. And to your point, kids, there is a lot of recency bias because they don't do a lot of history.
No.
How important is it for a program like Ole Miss, a program like Arkansas this season that's still trying to rebuild, programs like that, how important is it for them from a recruiting standpoint, if at all, to get to that 6-win mark to say, hey, we went to a bowl, see, we're going in the right direction, we're building, or – even if you don't get there, can a program say, hey, look at how young we are, we're getting better, we're out of the clouds, all that stuff, we're coming along? I mean, how does, from your experience, how does that stuff resonate or not resonate with kids?
Well, you know, nothing happens in a vacuum, so, you know, there are a million factors at play, obviously. So in different situations are different. I think you can get so far with that pitch of, hey, we're young, we're coming out of the clouds. But in order to actually get to the level – where you, if you're wanting to compete against the Alabamas and, you know, those other schools that you guys have to recruit against down there, they have to recruit against at Ole Miss, you've got to win. You can't be missing bowl games. It's, you know, it's one step at a time, I guess, as you kind of get that foundation that can get you back to 6-6 or 7-5. And from there, you can start picking up a little bit of momentum, I think. Of course, that can go the other direction on you in a hurry, you know, if you do have a bad season in there. But, you know, it's all about having a positive trajectory, I think. I think if you can sit down and you can show a player, hey, we were this bad 4 years ago, and we've steadily improved the last 2 years, I think that can resonate with them to an extent. I don't think that you're going to be recruiting 5 stars off of 7-5, but, you know, you build to that. Look at Clemson.
Yeah, I mean, what the job he's done is incredible. Are they now officially? I'll ask you this: who's the biggest threat to Alabama as a national recruiting power right now? Is it Clemson or Georgia?
Clemson. Look, I want to point out something that's even more impressive than the players they get. The last 2 years of the early signing period, not only have they been done, every kid that they've had committed has signed. They've had one decommitment in the last 5 years. When kids commit to Clemson, they sign with Clemson, and they sign early with Clemson. It's the most efficient recruiting operation I've ever seen in my life. I don't know what's happening there. They do not think about it, in this landscape, do not have decommitments ever, and everybody that commits signs in December.
What is the secret to that?
Almost unbelievable.
What's he doing? How are they pulling that off?
If you ask the assistants there, which I have, they say, you know, we just tell them that if they're going to commit to us, they're not allowed to take other visits. And if they do, we drop them. And we've made an example of people over the years that we will do it. Now, I think Clemson can get away with that now because they've built up to it. But I think if an Iowa or an Iowa State starts to do that, the kids are going to laugh at them. So you've got to build to it. And this thing snowballed. And now, you know, these kids take it seriously, and they don't want to get dropped. And Clemson will drop them if they do not sign, or if they take other visits, or if they visit other schools or anything like that. They just don't have it. And because they're such a powerhouse, because it doesn't work at Alabama. Look at Alabama. They have decommitments. Not everybody signs early with Alabama. For whatever reason, there's something specific about Clemson where everybody signs and nobody decommits.
Do you sense any sort of a shift in the way Alabama is viewed by kids? They lost the championship game, which I know is – there are 100-some-odd schools that would have killed to have gone to the championship game and lost rather than where they went. But Clemson beat them. They had a lot of coaches leave. Saban's not getting any younger. Do you sense any loss of momentum there at all?
I mean, I don't know. I guess a little, but, you know, not a lot. I mean, in the way that maybe they're not getting everybody they want anymore. And maybe I'm a little bit jaded here because they still are getting everybody they want. Them and Clemson get everybody they want in Florida. So if the momentum is stalled, it's been other places. I don't know if they're having the same success in Texas that they've had, but for whatever reason, it helps that Florida State and Miami are both kind of marred in uncertainty, to say the least. that, you know, the Alabamas and the Clemsons are just kind of having their way in Florida right now and getting everybody.
I'm kind of jumping around here, but I hadn't talked to you in a long time, so I want to get your thoughts on a few guys. Did you see Jerry and Ely at all in the postseason?
Yeah, a little bit.
From what you saw, if he doesn't go baseball, if he ends up on the Ole Miss campus in August, how impactful could he be immediately and in his career?
No, I love him. I saw him at the Under Armour game, I believe, and you know, I thought he was the most impressive player in the field. Is he, you know, obviously, you know, it goes without saying, if I think all that, I think he can very, very easily impact the SEC right away if he decides not to go baseball. Have we heard anything on that? I didn't really, you know, he's not really my guy. So after I left Orlando, I didn't really check back in on him. Is he still, what's kind of the latest on that? Is he going to play football?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. There's this, and I don't know whether it's, you know, there's always recency bias because the baseball thing is still further away than the football thing is recent. But he played in that game, dominated that game. He signed with Ole Miss. There was, at the time, I think people gave it a coin toss. And now if you talk to people around it, there's a real growing optimism that he's going to come, that he's going to play college football, that, you know, there's a path for him where he plays college football and he could do the professional baseball thing by – almost kind of like A.J. Brown did with the Padres, where you just sort of bookmark yourself. You know, they pay you, they pay you, I don't know, $250,000, and 1 week a year you go to Arizona or Florida or whatever, and you just, you know, put the uniform on and kick around for a minute, and then basically they're just holding your rights in case you decide.
Yeah, that, just in case.
Yeah, if you decide football's not your thing and you want to play baseball or whatever. I mean, for a Major League Baseball team, you know, $500,000, what's the risk? Basically nothing.
No, absolutely. I thought, and to be honest with you, one of your guys are subscribers, I think, and I sparred about this, and he ended up being right. Right after we left Orlando with Ely, after, I only talked to him once. He's not my region. I don't cover him. But I had written some throw-in line and something where I thought he was going to Clemson. And I did. Sure enough, somebody jumped in my mentions. I think he was definitely a Rebel Grove guy. I was like, I wouldn't be so sure about that. I told him, like, I'm not so sure about that. I cover Florida. I just met the kid this week. We'll see. He ends up being right.
Yeah,
but, you know, that's a massive recruiting win, too, you know. And I think people, especially Clemson fans, because no –
Well, to your point, Rob.
Never lost a recruit in history.
Yeah, to your point about Clemson and Jerry and Ely, to your point – he did decommit publicly from Ole Miss so that he could take the visit to Clemson. It was a real thing. Yeah. It was a real thing, and it was a big win for Ole Miss. There's no question about that.
Well, but Clemson fans will tell you, you know, we didn't want him. He's going to play baseball anyway. But I've noticed that recently no school in the history of recruiting has ever lost a recruit. it's always not a take. You know, we didn't want him. We backed off him at the end, which is definitely a little bit of what Clemson's doing there. But you know, one day maybe a school will actually lose a recruit. It's
no,
not happened yet.
No.
Every time, but we'll see.
That will never happen. So LSU's off to a big start. I know it's not your region and stuff, but they're like number two in the rankings. They've got a lot of kids committed. Is that just because there's a lot of kids in Louisiana that jumped in the boat early, or is Ed Orgeron gaining some momentum?
Look, they had a nice season, especially by the standards. I thought they were going to fall on their face last year. I'm not afraid to admit that. I was like, they'll be lucky to finish 6-6. This is before the year, you know, it turns out. Traditionally, they've always gotten their guys from Louisiana, mostly, you know. And even when they're not great, they tend to get them. So now that there's a little bit of momentum going on the field, you know, they surprised a lot of people last year, I think. On top of, there's a lot of talent in Louisiana right now. I think the stars are kind of aligned for him. And it's never – has any of us ever thought that Orgeron was a bad recruiter? I mean, that's never been the problem, right? We always knew he could recruit kids. It's always been about what happens when he gets them on campus as a head coach. You know, I think he surprised some people last year, but I still think there's a, you know, to-be-seen element here. I don't think that it's time to start celebrating at Orgeron as the next Bill Belichick. It'll be interesting to see what happens this year.
Just kind of jumping around as we finish – Dan Mullen off to a really good start at Florida. That is kind of in your area there. What's this feeling a year in as to what kind of a fit he is in Gainesville?
Look, he's a great coach. I don't think there's any taking that away from him. So I don't want it to sound like I'm knocking Dan Mullen here. I think he's a really good coach, and I think he'll fix that Florida offense. And I think what he did last year with, you know, turning them around is amazing. But he is in a pretty good situation as far as, like, Florida State's a disaster. Half the fans already want Willie Taggart out. Miami undergoing another coaching change. They can't figure it out to sustain success. They don't have a quarterback. So there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the other two big programs. So somebody has to be the top dog, right? And everything they did last year with Felipe Franks improving and the offense improving and them looking like a competitive SEC team has come at the exact right time for Dan Mullen. Because everybody, you know, right now Florida State is a little bit – they can't get a quarterback to save their life. They lost a quarterback to Mack Brown last year. Everybody's a little hesitant about Willie Taggart right now. Nobody really knows what to make of Manny Diaz. Miami had a bad year last year. Florida State had a bad year last year. So with the stars, it's kind of a line for Dan. And that's not saying that he lucked into it or anything. It's just he just happened to walk into a good situation at the right time.
You've got a story out on Wednesday morning about it's on Rivals.com. Coaches facing the most scrutiny in 2019. I'm clearly with you on number one, Clay Helton. That's pretty obvious. I'll be honest. I took a double take on number two. Willie Taggart's about to start his second season at Florida State. Do you think he's already in some degree of trouble?
No. And if you read the lead, I mean, there are guys on there that haven't even coached yet. It's just who's going to be – like the head coach, Les Miles, is on there.
Yeah.
He's not in any trouble. It's just that people are going to scrutinize him because he's, you know, he's Les Miles. Taggart's on there because I don't think he's in trouble, but I think that if they don't win seven games or more this year, he will be in trouble. I mean, there are – living in this state, you would be surprised how – cautious, I guess, Seminole fans and boosters and the people around that program are right now. I think they were expecting something that they did not get last year. The recruiting this year was, I mean, they had a nice class, but they had one scholarship quarterback in the quarterback room because they lost everybody. And they couldn't, you know, they had a guy committed. They flipped to Mack Brown in North Carolina at the last second. They had to try to get a grant. I mean, it's been, I don't know. There's not a lot of reason for optimism around the Seminoles. And I think that, you know, if there is another not great season there, yeah, he's going to be in some trouble. I don't think they're going to fire him at the end of this year. Although some people do. You can find some media members thinking that this could be Taggart's swan song. It's not necessarily me. But he will be scrutinized. He is already. Everything he does is already kind of picked apart. There's a little bit of buyer's remorse there for sure.
All right. Last thing, way off topic. Same content item. You go to overtime and you say this week's overtime deals with television theme songs, the top five of which have been ranked below. I want to argue with you for the sake of good podcasting, but you have Cheers number one, and I've got to think about it more, but my initial thought is you're right. There's something about that song every time I hear it, and I loved the show. I loved everything about the show. From Sam Malone to Woody to Cliff to everybody there. That was a Diane. Even the people you hated on the show, you loved on the show. And every time I hear that song, I kind of get – it's funny. I get kind of a nostalgic sort of lump in my throat.
Look, that's the thing about that song. I didn't love the show. I don't think I've seen it very – I've seen some episodes. My parents liked it. But for whatever reason, I still love that song, and I still know all the lyrics to that song. Even though I can't tell you how or why I know all the lyrics to that song, I just do. It's like they just kind of manifested themselves in my brain.
And here's where I'll reveal how old I am. You've got Fresh Prince of Bel-Air number two. I have no argument. Welcome Back Kotter number three, which is sort of my generation there. I don't know that I've ever seen My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I couldn't tell you the theme song to that show if my life depended on it at this moment.
So I think, you know, I've watched on Netflix. I think it originally maybe aired on the CW. It's not a very popular show. It is a critically acclaimed show, though. People love it. It's a musical. So there are a ton of songs in it. But the theme song is funny. It's a really smart – this comedian, actually, that my cousin did stand-up comedy with at an improv troupe. So I kind of have some connection to her is how I kind of started watching the show. And no, it's good. It's smart. It's funny. It's got a bad name. I think the actual title of the show is terrible. But the show itself is good. If you ever get real bored, pop on Netflix and check it out. I think you'll like it.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out. You have Unbreakable, number five, Kimmy Schmidt, which is a great, great show. If you're in the mood for just something ridiculously stupid and silly and you're in a bad mood and you need to cheer up, that show is one of my go-tos. I sort of save it for those moments. So it's right there, too.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's good. All right, I know you got stuff to do.
Also with a great theme.
Yeah. I like the theme song, too. I know you got stuff to do. Good luck to your Mets, and I'll hopefully talk to you soon.
All right, good luck with the Cubs as well, Neil. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, man. Thank you.
Bye.
My thanks again to Rob. Always fun to talk to him. One of my favorite people, really, in the network. Going to start visiting with some network people, let you guys kind of get to know them a little bit. We'll talk to people who are involved in the recruiting ranking process. We'll talk to some guys who've now seen some of the kids at some of the combines and some of the Rivals camp series stops. So we'll do that kind of as we move along here in the 2020 class. Going to talk some college basketball recruiting on our next Soft Verbal. Corey Evans of Rivals.com will join. We'll talk about the momentum that Ole Miss has on the recruiting trail following Kermit Davis's SEC Coach of the Year performance, an Ole Miss team that was picked to finish last in the SEC and ended up finishing in the NCAA tournament. So we'll talk with Corey about some of the guys on the Ole Miss radar and college basketball recruiting in general, which obviously is under the microscope these days, given some of the things that are happening with the FBI and federal court cases and such. So again, thanks to Rob Cassidy. Stay tuned for another edition of the Soft Verbal Podcast presented by Dead Soxy here soon. Until then, I'm Neil McCready. That does it. Talk to you soon.